Yeah, life in the Midbar and life in Eretz Yisrael. In the Midbar, we are living in what you might call a spiritual cocoon. We don't have the problems of the outside world. We have the man that's coming every day. We have a traveling well of water. We are surrounded by clouds of glory that protect us and even wash our clothes and prevent our shoes from wearing out. And what do you do in the Midbar? In the Midbar, you sit and you learn Torah. Once now, you even, and we didn't even travel a lot, if you think about this. If you go through the Cheshbon, again, I'm not going to go through it right now, but we actually stayed, even after the 40 years of wandering, or during the 40 years of wandering, we actually stayed in one place for up to 19 years. It's amazing. Most of the journeys were at the very beginning and at the very end. We were not... People have a picture, we were wandering like Bedouins for 40 years. No, we stayed in places years at a time. In one place, as I say, almost 20 years. We stayed there. So, what was the desert experience like? The desert experience was primarily an experience in which every single day you see your bread coming from heaven. Every single day you spend time learning Torah. It's kind of the ideal kollel life. And indeed, the Gemara even says that lo nitna Torah elo liochlei haman. To truly receive the Torah, you got to be like a guy who lives on man, meaning you don't have any worries at all. Now, the Jew still complains plenty. That's very true. But basically, the Midbar, the Hashkacha of Hashem, was open, miraculous, clear. Now, what's going to happen once we come to Eretz Yisrael? So, see, we're used to saying that the Hashgacha of Hashem is clear in Eretz Yisrael and less clear in Chutz Laretz. That's true. But vis-a-vis the Midbar, even Eretz Yisrael is a tremendous Hester Panim, a concealment of Hashem. Instead of man coming from heaven, we are going to have to plant the crops and harvest and thresh and knead and grind. Instead of a traveling well, we're going to have to dig for water. We're going to have lawyers and doctors and accountants and storekeepers. We're going to have armies and soldiers. Of course, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is protecting us. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu is protecting us in less miraculous ways, less open ways. And the Meraglim are afraid that this is going to be a Nisayon to our Ruchnius. It'll be a Nisayon to our Ruchnius in two different ways, two opposite directions. One is, the Torah itself is made, that if we see the hand of Hashem less visibly, we will attribute our success to ourselves, and we're going to say, as the Torah itself says, we're going to say, Kochi v'yotzim yadi, it is my strength and the might of my hands that has accomplished. V'ram levavecha, your heart will become arrogant. You will forget God. So one thing that might happen, number one, is we may be afflicted with arrogance and gaiva. Because as we see the hand of Hashem not as open and miraculous, we will attribute more of our success to ourselves. Now that's an illusion. That of course is not true. Because whatever success we have in life is only from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But there's an illusion that we're in charge. That's one thing that'll happen. The other thing that will happen is that as we have to struggle with the gashmius of the world, we will be less involved in Torah and Yiras Shamayim. And that's going to take us away. Right? So two different things. There's the gaiva aspect, there's the involvement in gashmius aspect, there's being connected with other cultures that could teach you bad things. So Mimela, the Meraglim, had the following cheshbon. I mentioned last time. And worse, yeah, let me just add one other thing. And worse of all, it was already known we're not going to have Moshe Rabbeinu to guide us, because it was already known from Eldad Umedad that Moshe Rabbeinu would die before they come to Eretz Yisrael. So the Meraglim's Kavana, according to the Netziv, the Malbim, and Rav Hirsch, was not, as it were, to lack emunah in Hashem. But basically it says, we need more time I mean, imagine this scenario to take, you know, even in the present day. You know, you're learning in Kollel or Yeshiva. You're growing. And your parents or your family or your parnasa, whatever the push is, says, gotta go to work, gotta go to school, gotta leave Yeshiva. And you might understand that that's necessary, without addressing the specifics. You might say, well, yeah, I have to go to school, I gotta go to work. But I need more time. I haven't been here long enough. I need to learn more. I need to build a foundation. I'm sure that, you know, you've had these discussions with different people over time. And the Meraglim are basically saying, okay, we're going to come to Eretz Yisrael, but we need Moshe to be here longer. The longer we stay in the desert, the more we have Moshe. The longer we stay in the desert, the more we have Kollel, the more we have the Man, the more we have the Be'er, and we absorb lessons of Emunah, so that when we join the so-called real world, we will see that even when we plant, and even when we fight, and even when we start our own businesses, it comes from Hashem, because year after year after year, we see that the Lechem comes min Hashemayim. So, when the Meraglim are saying, the nations are too strong, the nations will destroy you, they are referring to the fact that we are not yet worthy of defeating these enemies because our spiritual ruchnius is not strong enough. And therefore we need time, we need to be in the midbar to absorb Torah and Yiras Shemayim and to benefit, of course, from the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu, who they know is going to die before they enter the land of Israel. So in a sense, the chet of the Meraglim was not so much, and when I say the Chet Meraglim, I include both the Meraglim and the people who responded. When I say Chet Meraglim, I mean both groups. Was not so much a lack of Emunah in Hashem, but a lack of Emunah that Hashem gave them the ability to navigate this difficult Nisoya without Moshe Rabbeinu. So when it says this is a land that consumes the inhabitants, it's not simply talking about physically they'll destroy us, but it refers to the idea that we will be involved so much in the gashmias of the world that it will eat us up and leave no makam for the ruchnis. Did you want to?
Then it said the beginning of this final idea is that it's not a lack of amuna, but rather we need more time.
Well, in other words, it's not a I mean that's the general mahalach. They believe in Hashem, but they feel they need more time in the midbar. So therefore, it's a lack of emunah. It is a lack of emunah, but it's not a lack of emunah in God. It's a lack of emunah that God will give them the koach to be able to withstand these nisyonos, these trials and tribulations. In a way, it's a lack of emunah in yourself. And here, the Kutzker Rebbe, one of the great Hasidic Rebbes, adds a very beautiful thought. It's a homiletical thought, but it's a very, very beautiful thought. In other words, one of the lines that the Meraglim said, we were like grasshoppers in our eyes. We looked at them, and we were grasshoppers in our eyes, and so we were in their eyes. This is what the pasuk says. V'niyeh be'einenu. We were in our eyes like chagavim, like grasshoppers. We were in our eyes. V'chein hayinu li'einehem. And so we were in their eyes. So the Kutzker Rebbe says, everything starts with the way you view yourself. If you look at yourself as an insignificant grasshopper, that is how they will see you, whoever the they is. But if you look at yourself as an Eved Hashem, and Hashem, if Hashem gives you a mission, if Hashem gives you a commandment, if Hashem gives you a role, Hashem by definition will give you the tools and the abilities to fulfill that role. So in a sense, although in general they have Emunah and Hashem, but in a sense there's a lack of Emunah and Hashem here, because if they're saying we are not adequate for this role, they are saying Hashem didn't give us the tools. But if Hashem said to go, then he did give you the tools. If he gave you the mission, He will give you the ability to accomplish it. This is a very, very important lesson. A person says, oh, I can't learn, I can't daven, I can't do mitzvahs. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded us to do these things, He gave us the ability. Now, yes, different people have different trials, different nisyonos, different difficulties. And for some people it can be very, very difficult. But all I can say is that the people who have it extra difficult, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made extra strong. So that's exactly right. That, in a way, it's almost like a compliment, right? When things are easy, you know, that means Hashem is saying, well, you know, Baruch Hashem, I mean, we'd like it to be easy, but, you know, Hashem is basically saying, well, this is what you can take, I'll give it to you. When things are hard, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, you're a tough guy. You're good enough, you're tough enough, you're strong enough. I'll give you a hard challenge and see how you do it. Right? But to say that I can't be matzliach, that's not possible. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded me, then of course it's possible. Right? So that's kind of the chedat d'mravim. So the kavanah was l'shem shemayim, but once again, you understand the poignancy here from a human perspective. Klal Yisrael will feel helpless without Moshe. First of all, the chedat ha'egel itself came because Moshe wasn't there. And this is really, this is repeating the same thing. How can we go to Eretz Yisrael if there won't be a Moshe Rabbeinu? It's mamish the same. Taina is the chedat ha'egel. See? Same thing. It's an over-dependence on Moshe Rabbeinu. In a way, okay, I don't want to actually go in this direction that much, but I'll point out that there sometimes can be an over-dependence on even a Rebbe or a Rosh Hashiva or a Chassidish or Rebbe. Everybody needs a Rebbe. Everybody needs, more than one, needs someone that you can ask Shilas to write that. A Rebbe has a Rebbe, and a Rosh Hashiva has a Rosh Hashiva. Sometimes the Rosh Hashiva is not alive anymore, but still, someone that they look to, and they remember, and they try to imagine, how would my Rebbe guide me? Even if sometimes as you get older, you know. I'll tell you, Revolba, just to give you an example. Revolba was the great, great, great Bar Mitzvah, was a Talmud of Rav Yeruchim in Mir, all the Gedolim in Mir. And by the time he was already in Eretz Yisrael, he was an older man, and he had been Mashgiach for many, many years. And he was a person who had hundreds, if not thousands, of Talmidim. And his Ali Shur is a sefer that so many people learn, a beautiful, beautiful set of Svarim. And yet, he looked for a Rebbe. You know, when Rav Huttner came to Eretz Yisrael, towards the end of his life, Rav Volba, who, I don't know if he's even older, he might have been even older, I'm not sure, but you know, they're kind of the same age, there was not a big difference in age, he would go to hear Rav Huttner's talks. Because Rav Volba said he needed a Rebbe. All of his Rebbes were dead, and although they still were Mechasikim, in terms of their teachings, he needed a Rebbe. So when he was already 70 years old, he was going to hear Shiurim from someone else, and they say he would sit there. I don't think he used a tape recorder, it's already too modern, but no, he would take notes, he would write things down, and everything else. So on one hand, you need a Rebbe. You need a Rebbe, of course you need a Rebbe. Pirkei Avos says, Asei Lecha Rav. But there is also an issue of being overly dependent, meaning ultimately, a Rebbe is supposed to give you the tools so that when you have issues in life, you're able to kind of figure out what Das Torah would be, what the Torah wants you to do. That doesn't mean, you know, you'll stop asking. There'll always be need to ask, but not every single thing. Meaning to say, you should be able, you get married, you have children, right? You have to make decisions about your children and with your wife. So, you know, a good Rebbe is someone that bedafka, just like a good parent, right? A good parent is someone that gives a child as he grows up the ability to become a mature adult and go off on his own. Right? A parent who basically says, you have to be dependent on me the rest of your life. What do they say? They say that some rich guy was driving around. He had a chauffeured limousine, like a big, big car. And when the back of the limousine was opened up, the chauffeur came out carrying his 40-year-old man, like you carry a baby. So they asked the father of this 40-year-old, like, why is this kid being carried around? Why is this 40-year-old man being carried? He says, I have enough money, he doesn't have to walk. What type of thing would that be? You know. So with the Rebbe, it's really the same thing. A Rebbe should give you the koach to be able to make decisions. That's a very important thing. And in a sense, I don't want to psychoanalyze it too much, but in a sense, this is an aspect, according to the Nitziv, of the Maisa of the Meraglim, where they were so dependent on Moshe, they couldn't be masig a life on their own without a Moshe Rabbeinu, and yet, that was the Ratzon Hashem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu basically said, yeah, it's a tragedy, you're not going to have Moshe Rabbeinu, it certainly is a tragedy. But the Torah's Moshe, you will always have. The Torah that Moshe brought from Hashem. And that will give you the koach, and that will give you the strength, and you will have to go on. So, what's interesting is this, though. What's interesting is, so on some level, if you think about it, when Hashem decreed that you will wander in the desert for 40 years, in some way, that's not a punishment. That's exactly what they asked for. What did the Meraglim say? We need more time. We want Moshe Rabbeinu longer. We need to grow in Emunah. We need to grow in Yiras Shamayim. We need to grow in Torah. So what Hashem gave them was, Hashem gave them another 39 years. He gave them exactly what they want. The punishment, so you may ask, why is it called the punishment? The punishment is that the whole generation had to die. That's a punishment, because theoretically Hashem could have given them the years and then brought them in. The punishment was they forfeited their zechus to enter Eretz Yisrael. But the actual wandering in the desert was actually Hashem's chesed. You see, because what Hashem could have done is, Hashem could have killed the whole generation right then. Hashem could have killed everyone. In other words, well, I guess there would be a problem. I mean, the women didn't die because they didn't sin. So who would raise the little kids? You know, there'd all be single parent households. That would be difficult. But it was really a chesed that Hashem wanted to give even the new generation these 39 years to grow in their emunah with Moshe Rabbeinu. In other words, because of the Cheder Meraglim, Moshe Rabbeinu lived 39 more years leading Am Yisrael than he would have. Okay? So, that's the idea of the Cheder Meraglim. Yeah?
How long would it have been without the Cheder
Meraglim? Yeah. So, in the beginning of the Book of Devarim, it says that Kadesh Barnea, which is the town from which the Meraglim were sent, is 11 days from the Eretz Yisrael boundary. And the way Rashi explains it, it's a complicated pasuk, but Rashi explains, had there not been a Cheder Meraglim, we would have, you know, the Meraglim would have, let's say the Meraglim came back on the 8th of Av, okay? So let's assume we would have left on the 9th of Av, we would have been there 11 days later, we were right on the border. Right? And instead, we wound up wandering around for 39 more years.
So their claim is warranted.
They wanted more time. They said it's too quick. Now I remember, if I could use Lahavdil in the irreverent example. Did you ever hear of the cartoon Doonesbury? It used to be a very famous. I don't even know if it publishes anymore. But years ago, it was a very famous cartoon. And one of the characters didn't want to get a job. So this character attended every graduate program in the university. So he went to medical school and he went to law school and then he got PhD in philosophy and this way he just stayed in school perpetually. He never had to get a job. But in the comic, it was really a crisis. He was literally, after like 30 years, he was running out of degrees. There was no other degree that he could get, and he actually had to get a job. He was really very, very worried and panicky about, what am I going to do, you know, etc. So, Lahavdil, again, it is certainly Lahavdil. When a person needs to confront the world outside of yeshiva, it is very, very scary. And there are good reasons, there are very, very good reasons to try to stay as long as you can. These are good reasons. That's why I'm not comparing it to Doonesbury at all. There are very good reasons. But when there comes a time that one has to make that break, you have to know that if everything you learned is not going to give you the koach to handle that world, then you haven't learned it right. Because if the yeshiva only teaches you how to be a ben Torah, the Yerush Ram, when you're in a yeshiva, and it doesn't give you the koach to keep on growing when you're out of yeshiva, then even in yeshiva you really have not internalized what being a religious Jew is. So I understand a person panics, but a person has to know that the Eved Shtru will give you the koach to withstand this. And of course, this brings up another idea as well that Chassidus talks about a lot. And they say that in a sense, the Jewish people felt, their kavanah l'shem shemayim, they felt that they could only serve Hashem in pure spirituality. So in the Midbar, their whole avodah was ruchnius, because there was no gashmius they had to do. They didn't have to make money, they didn't have to plant food or hunt or anything like that. In the Midbar, they served Hashem with ruchnius. Once you're in Eretz Yisrael, there's so much gashmius you have to do. So they actually felt that you can't really serve Hashem by living in the gashmius sticker world. And that's also a mistake, because one of the things that the Torah teaches us is that we can serve Hashem in the physical and the material, and not only the spiritual. You know, if we go back to Shavuos, we just had Shavuos, in fact, I saw the real good. Who does the halacha test here? I see a real good test, halacha test on 100. Wow, very thorough. Again, 100 questions on the kids are Shulchan Aruch there. You have that? I don't want to be marked on that. I don't know how well I would do, but they look really, really good. But you may notice that at the bottom of the test, for some reason, he put a quote from the Gemara. Hakol modim biatzeres. You have that? If you have that test there, there's a quote, and it's not explained, and it's not connected to any question. Right? See that? It's a Gemara in Shabbos, Sachem rather. Yeah. Right. The bottom here. Hakol modim biatzeres debeinen nami lachem. Everybody admits the holiday of Shavuos. Right? There's a machlokas in the Gemara. How do you celebrate Yom Tov? According to Rabbi Eliezer, you have a choice. You can learn and daven all day and you don't have to eat. According to Rabbi Eliezer, you can fast on Yom Tov. Just learn and daven. Or you can devote most of the day to eating and drinking and just be, I'd say, minimal davening. And then you have a choice. Either totally for God or totally for you. Rabbi Yoshua says no. Part of it for Hashem, davening, learning. Part of it for you. Okay, that's a machlokas. We, of course, paskin, like Rabbi Yoshua, that Yom Tov has to be split, not necessarily 50-50, but you have to have a meal on Yom Tov. You have to learn and daven as well. Okay. But then the Gemara says, that's a machlokas about Pesach and Sukkot. But when it comes to Shavuos, even Rabbi Eliezer, that gives you the option of fasting, on Shavuos you gotta eat. Gotta eat. Because that is the day that the Torah was given. That's what the Gemara says, Gemara Pesachim. Now, in a sense, that's a non sequitur. I might have thought that the Gemara should say the opposite. Since Shavuos is the day the Torah was given, then maybe Rabbi Yoshua might admit all you have to do is learn. But the Gemara says the other way. Because it was the day the Torah was given, even Rabbi Eliezer, who every other Yom Tov says you can learn all day, on Shavuos you have to eat. What's the pshat? You would think the opposite. So the Meshech Chachma says, this is exactly the pshat, that the Torah was given to teach us how we can sanctify and elevate not only the spiritual parts of our lives, but even the physical. Now, if I were to say on Shavuos, I'm not going to eat, I'm just going to learn, what you're saying is, you only become Kadosh by Ruchnius, and not through Gashmius. But that's exactly what the Torah was not given to you for. Because if it's a question of Ruchnius, the Torah should have been with the Malachi Asharis. Remember, there was a whole thing. The Malachim didn't want to give the Torah to. Let Moshe take the Torah. So in order to show that we can eat and drink L'shem Shemayim and serve Hashem in a physical way, that is why Shavuos B'davka, there is a Chiyuv of Seuda. The Maral says, this is the meaning of another Gemara in Shabbos. The Gemara in Shabbos says that a certain person said to Rav Yossi that blessed is Hashem, Baruch Rachamana, who gave us, right, Baruch Rachamana, who gave us, blessed is God, who gave us a threefold Torah, Torah Nevi'im Ksuvim, to a threefold nation, Kohanim, Levi, Yisrael, in the third month, Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, after 3 days of preparation. Shlosha Shemei Hagbalah. And the Gemara does nothing with that. All you have is an observation that many aspects of Matan Torah are connected to the number three. Just like so much of the Seder is connected to the number four, four sons, four cups of wine, four Lashonos of Geula, four questions. Right, everyone knows Seder is four, Matan Torah is three. But why is that important? What does it mean? So Maral says the following. Maral is a whole theory, a whole shita of numerology, these spiritual meanings of numbers. And the Maral says the number three is very significant. Geometrically, the number three is represented by a triangle. Now at a triangle, if you take the base of a triangle, you have the two points at the opposite ends of the line. So they represent opposites. There's a point here and a point here. They're moving opposite. But then when you draw lines from the extremities and they meet at the apex, then the lines that are drawn from those two extremities actually meet on top, right? That is what a triangle is. So based on that, the Maral says the number three symbolically represents the harmonization and integration of opposite ideas. That you take things that are opposite and they are combined and synthesized and integrated. So, why is the Torah compared to three? Because that's exactly what the Torah is. We are guf and neshama. On one hand, we are physical beings. We have tivus. We need to eat, to sleep. A person. We also have urges for anger, domination, control. Right? These are kind of yetzer haras that come from the gashmias within our personalities, the chumrias, the material, the fact that we are, as it were, even things like laziness, decadence. But we also have a godly soul that strives to be connected to God. Without a Torah, these two conditions live in perpetual contradiction. And you can only be holy as you try to escape the body. That is why in other religions, let's say Catholicism, that is why to be truly holy, you have to be celibate. Because you can't be involved in sexual intercourse with a woman and somehow be holy. Theoretically, you're supposed to be poverty-stricken. Obviously, celibacy and poverty has not worked in the Christian churches either. But that is the theory. The theory is that celibacy is holiness, poverty is holiness, because the world of Gashmi will destroy you and drag you down. So as a result, without a Torah, you're always living in contradictions. Sometimes you're spiritual, but then your body drags you down and you become physical. And you have no way to sanctify the physical. But the Torah is connected to three, because the Torah says that you can eat and drink and marry and have a family. And if you do it with the right kavanas, l'shem shamayim, it all becomes a chelek of your avodas Hashem. Torah is about synthesis, harmonization, balance, integration. The very first mitzvah of the Torah is to be fruitful and multiply. The Torah doesn't say become poor. The Torah says, I mean, if you are poor, you're makabalit. Of course, we're makabalit, but there's no mitzvah. There's no mitzvah to be poor. And that's countless, there's even an expression in Yiddish, countless Jewish parents have told their children, there's no mitzvah to be poor. Okay. Be it as it may, the concept is everything is neutral. You can be a millionaire and serve Hashem with your millions. You can be a pauper and serve Hashem in your poverty. Whatever material situation that you're in, there is Avodas Hashem. The way you run your business, the way you raise your children, when you play basketball or go jogging, if your kavana is, the Rambam says this, no chosteis, if your kavana is that you want to be strong and healthy to be able to serve Hashem, the jogging and the basketball become a mitzvah because you are doing it for the purpose of serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's an amazing thing. It all depends on your mental state. Two guys could be doing the same thing. And after 120 years, one person is going to get rewarded in Olam Haba, and the other person won't. I don't know if he'll be punished, but one won't get rewarded. Difference? What were you thinking when you were doing it? Right? And that thought can make all the difference in everything. And the Rambam says that there's a pasuk in Mishlei that is the klal gadol in all of this. And the pasuk in Mishlei says, "V'chol derachecha rather da'eyu, know Hashem v'chol derachecha in all of your pathways, everything you do, serve Hashem." You're serving Hashem in the Beis Medrash, but you're serving Hashem when you go to college. You're serving Hashem when you go to work. Think about how you can make a Kiddush Hashem. Think about earning money to take care of a family and get stuck up. Think about these things. And they all become Eifanim of Avodas Hashem. This is the lesson of three. And in a sense, this is also an aspect of the Chet HaMeraglim, that they thought they could serve Hashem only in the spiritual modality. And therefore they saw Eretz Yisrael as a Yerida, when in fact it was the level of serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even in the gashmiest details of life, that was so important. Okay, we'll stop here. Take care.